Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode 247. I am Chris Featherstone. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Live and living, Kelligan, funky like a monkey, if you will, always, always ready to have a bunch of fun like we will tonight, like we will every night. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. We got a bunch of people lining up here ready to ask some questions for the guest of the week this week. Really excited. I had him on the show almost 2 years ago, just about 2 years ago, and a lot has happened between then and now. He's in the main event picture at Impact Wrestling now. He once was coming in and making a big impression on the X division, and he pulled kind of like a Finn Balor in New Japan. Or Finn Balor now on the WWE. He was kind of like a junior heavyweight. He's been junior heavyweight tag team champions in New Japan. But he's doing some more heavyweight division things now in Impact Wrestling. So that's very, very interesting to see. He's been in the business for a long time. So he's always a man of challenges. So going into the heavyweight division in Impact Wrestling is definitely a challenge, but a challenge that he has been stepping up and just really taken by force. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Impact Wrestling star Matt Vidal, how are you tonight, sir?
Hey, thanks for the introduction.
Absolutely, man. So you've over the past couple months now, you've been you were in made some noise in the X division. And then, you were in a big feud. You were in a big angle with Bobby Lashley, Destination X, I believe it was, that you defeated him. And that was probably one of the biggest upsets of the year. But you got a lot of people was on your side, and you got a bunch of pops for that. The goal was for Lashley to choose the World Heavyweight Championship if he would have won, and for you to choose the championship of your choosing. I believe Bruce Pritchard was in charge at the time, assuming that you would stay in the X division, but you decided to challenge yourself, and you've been hanging with the heavyweights nowadays. What are your thoughts on hanging with the heavyweights?
All right, there you go. I was wondering if you were going to ask me a question, if you were just going to say a bunch of stuff. I was like, all right, well, I guess I get what you're saying.
You've been interviewed
a
bunch of times, Matt. You know when it's a double dutch. You know when they're coming.
I know. Paul. I was trying to be difficult just for fun.
The
I just want to leave you
Paul.
Hanging. Well, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, there's like there's an ancient Zen, the word is like Xuan or Xuan. And that's
mm-hmm.
the sound. Okay, so if you're sitting outside on a quiet night and it's totally
mm-hmm.
silent, and then all of a sudden in the distance, and you can't hear where, but you just hear like a bird crow or chirp, make a noise in a distance, or an owl hoot.
Mm-hmm.
And then moments later, it's silence again, but the silence feels deeper because you heard that sound.
Yeah.
And that sound actually deepened the silence. And that's me. I think that's what I do. I try and deepen the silence, which hopefully also draws a little bit of attention. But, you know, what I'm going for now these days is the opposite of what people think. You know, you were talking a lot about me doing this thing in the X Division, and the ideas in life, there's no real boundaries, no real constraints other than the ones we set on ourselves. So I just analyzed all the daily assumptions that I make. I just assumed I should go for the X Division title. And then I realized, well, I can do anything I want. And in Global Force, like, you can make a big impact quickly, and that's what I'm trying to do. But, you know, I'm back to going into that X Division title because since 2003 I have fantasized about winning that belt, and I would love to bring that to fruition. And I think coming up we have a lovely pay-per-view coming up, and I'll have a chance at the X Division title, and it'll be possibly my first ever Ultimate X match.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure on the match right now or what's exactly happening, how that's sorting out for the pay-per-view, but hopefully I get the match and get to walk home champion, because I'm making statements in GFW.
Absolutely.
And my statement is, think for yourself and question authority.
There you go. Absolutely. And that has made you one of the key players in GFW Impact Wrestling. I think it's a little bit of both. What is the official title?
What is official title?
Of the promotion. Is it GFW?
Do you think I work for the network, man? Do you think I work for the company, man? I'm just a wrestler, dude. I'm just one of the boys. We just come in there and throw down. When we see my name and another guy's name on a sheet of paper, we know we're going to go out there and go to work. You know, I don't know. It could be called Bananas and Pajamas Pro Wrestling for all I care. It's funny because I think there is a special joy in still referring to Impact or GFW as just TNA.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, it's a nice little shorthand. It doesn't, you know, everybody likes to classify wrestling organizations as this or that, and so you can kind of peg them down and define them, but you can't say, like, to assume that there's continuity in it is to assume that the Yankees from 7 years ago or the Yankees of today, it's a completely different team, and you shouldn't think of them as the same team. They're a completely different individual organization. So, like, every once in a while, people send me kind of the mean tweet about, oh, I don't watch GFW, and I was like, well, one, nobody asked you, and two, you know, I'm only asking people to watch me and my friends, and I don't care where they're wrestling, but, you know, you're going to miss out if you don't watch the stuff that I'm a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're celebrating. How long have you been in the business? How many years have you been in the business now?
Oh, man, I had my, you want to start from when I was one of the best backyard wrestlers ever in Missouri. You know, I was doing that at 15, 16. I built a ring in my backyard. But I had my pro debut in 2000. So what are we in, 2017? So, yeah, you know, 17, 18 years.
Wow. 17 years. That is quite incredible.
Yeah.
Out of
still peaking.
Out of the 17 years do you have a most memorable moment? What sticks out? Like, what one match, one signing, one incident, one backstage, you know, conversation or anything?
Oh,
one
interaction
with a fan?
I mean, it's got to be the Pancakes and Pile Driver podcast, without a doubt.
Well, it's the Pancakes and Power Slams podcast, and
yeah.
Thank you for patronizing and putting me over. So, hey, I'll take it.
Hey, man,
ladies
I know
and
the
gentlemen,
the best thing, I mean, the best thing that I've ever done is log on to prowrestlingtees.com/Matt Seidel, and just, like, those t-shirts just, like, really make me feel good. And you spell that M-A-T-T-S-Y-D-A-L. That's also Matt Seidel on Instagram. I'm really not funny or snarky on Instagram. I just post wrestling pictures. I sometimes try to make a better story, but I should make a story during this podcast. Now I'll try to stay focused.
Why not?
I don't know if you can do if I can do that at once. The audio might mess up, and we're trying to do a professional show here, Chris. Don't have your guests distracted or eating food. Which I was like, I had to walk away from that chicken and potatoes I was cooking because it would be in my face right now.
I'm
definitely on the need to get bigger plan. But and you know, like you said, 17 years, but I really don't think I've done my best work yet. And I don't. I mean, I feel. Like this work that I'll be creating in the next 5 years will be the best stuff I've ever done. I mean, I certainly think I can keep going forward and creating new fun wrestling for everybody. And what's great is that the style of wrestling that I've been a proponent of for the last 17 years that I love that made me a fan of wrestling, that's the kind of wrestling we're sharing with the world now. And everybody's getting a taste of it, and everybody's loving it. And that's why the business is thriving, because the guys are doing great work, and I'm proud to be a part of this movement.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of wrestlers doing great work, put your upcoming dates over. You've put my show over. You've put your website over. Now it's time to put your dates over. I saw on Twitter that you have a flyer about Black Friday Mayhem, and let me make sure I'm going to emphasize something very interesting. Since you put my show over, there's many, many, many people watching via live WrestleZone.com. So this is what I'm about to do. As we're talking right now, I'm actually showing the flyer to the live WrestleZone.com Facebook. So they are they're looking at the flyer as we're talking right now. So Black Friday. Put it over. Black Friday Mayhem.
Oh, man. Come on. I don't have my schedule off the top of my head like that. On Saturday, October 7th, I'm in Ardmore, Oklahoma for Oklahomania. I'll be doing a convention in Dallas earlier that day, signing autographs, selling some sweet T-shirts that say Matt Seidel, We Are All One, with a big peace sign on them. So I can sell my propaganda there. The following weekend, we will be doing Pro Wrestling Guerrilla All-Star Weekend. That's the 21st of October, I think. That's a fun one. I'm sure people will steal it online, and I'll be happy that they see it. Then the next weekend, my Halloween weekend booking, where I'll be dressed as a unicorn, at least going to the ring, as is tradition. I typically like to wear a good Halloween costume, at least for half of my match, if not all of it. I'll be at WrestlePro, which is out of Hoboken, New Jersey. I'm not exactly sure where the show is, but that's going to be a good one. The following week on 11/4, I've got a charity show. It's in York, PA, and I could tell you some more, but that's not the case. I've got a show in Peru. Oh, man, dude, I got a show in Peru. Then I got shows in Montreal, in London, Canada, London, Ontario. Yeah, I'm hustling these days. And I try to keep everybody updated with my dates on my Twitter, which is still at Find Evan, because I got onto Twitter way too early. And then my Instagram is Matt Seidel, MATTSYDAL. And like I lied when I said I only post wrestling stuff. Occasionally I post like crazy Zen stories like that one I poorly retold at the beginning of your show. And just, you know, a little bit of insight into what makes me tick.
Yeah. The one that I showed up on the was the one for Excite Wrestling. Excite Wrestling. So whatever that was.
Is Keith Lee on that one too?
I think so.
Man, he's good.
That's the one. Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's getting spoiled. I've been on some crummy shows before in my day, and I'll tell you what, these days are getting some great wrestlers, man. Keith Lee, Matt Riddle, those guys are just tearing it up these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've had Keith Lee on my show before, and he, man, he's a horse, man. He's a stallion, and he definitely is. Very ambitious. Very, very ambitious. And so I'm really looking forward to him. Yeah, it was the one I showed was November the 24th. So
sounds good. Yeah, we just added that one. I'm excited.
Oh.
I love doing northern shows in November. You know, being a recent immigrant to Florida, I have found that the sunshine is my preferred weather, but you know, I love wrestling in Canada because when I was 16 years old, I threatened my parents that I was going to either run away and go to the heart dungeon or or go to Mexico and train to be a luchador.
But
luckily,
I
didn't have to run away to the heart dungeon.
You've wrestled in Mexico before, right?
Oh man, of course I've wrestled in Mexico. I wrestled for Dragon Gate, which is, you know, a lot of guys that trained in Mexico, and then wrestling is pretty universal. I love Lucha Libre, and I loved it a lot as a young kid. I'll never forget when I was, you know, I was a kid and I crossed the border into Tijuana and bought myself a fistful of pro wrestling luchador masks and really just became enamored with it. And I always thought I would have to wear a mask to wrestle, but I don't know. They just told me, Matt, man, you're just too charming and good looking to put you under a mask. So, you know, we just can't do it. We want people to come to the shows. We want to draw that female demographic that we just can't seem to get in the houses. But Matt, you can do it. We believe that you are the draw.
Yeah. There's been a lot of controversy going on with people, certain reporters. I got word that certain reporters had a very negative standpoint toward women's wrestling. Yeah, unfortunately, it got a lot of heat recently, and people like Ricochet, Jimmy Havoc, I believe even Aleister Black from NXT. There's a bunch of people who didn't necessarily like that. And what are your thoughts on women's wrestling?
I mean, I am. Here's the thing: if there's a woman who wants to make it in this business, they need to come to my school at 8223 Omerton Road, Largo, Florida. I love women's wrestling. I like when I first started training. I started with Mischief and Daisy Hayes, and me, those two, and Delirious, all four broke out together. So, I mean, if it wasn't for women's wrestling, I wouldn't have been traveling all over the country. Our car wouldn't have been nearly as valuable without those two in the car, and they were great and well-trained. I think the thing people notice sometimes with women is they get put in the ring a little bit premature before they're perhaps as well-trained as, let's say, a Japanese wrestler or that went to the full dojo program. But they're also like, you know, every person on the show serves a unique purpose and does a unique role. And I think women these days are selling tickets and they make wrestling watchable. I mean, the last thing I want to see is more dudes running around in their underwear all oiled up. Sign me up for dudes wearing more clothes when they're wrestling. And also the women performing when the women are athletes. They look awesome in there. When they're pretending to be athletes, they look like they're pretending to be athletes. You know, there's just a difference. There's levels to the game, and when you put a world-class person in there with someone who's 6 months in and just has duck feet and doesn't know or doesn't have the confidence and hasn't been, you know, trained well. I mean, there's, you can just see the difference, you know, in the women, just like you can see in the guys. But right now in wrestling, I think it would be advantageous to be a woman in this day and age, because the opportunities are really coming, and there's a pretty good quick climb to the top. Whereas, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit more challenging for guys. But, you know, I mean, really, it's a good time to be in the business in any role. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I guess I think you're referring to those, some sexist remarks. I think people, I just don't react to that stuff. I can't put it over one way or the other. It's pathetic. Like, you know, if people are going to be stupid and ignorant, you know, I don't even dignify them with much of my time. So, yeah, I didn't look too much into that. Fiasco.
Yeah, it was. It came. I was reporting a story on WrestleZone, and it was. I was kind of following a tweet. It started off with me reporting a story, and I saw something that was retweeted, and I just kind of followed that followed those string of tweets, and I was like, "Whoa, what is going on here?" It was quite interesting, not in a positive way, but you know, just women as objects. That's certainly you know, not good. The Attitude Era kind of did that. Was that something that you enjoyed, that woman during the Attitude Era?
Well, the first woman I ever fell in love with was Sunny, on the back of a PWI, I believe, if you know what I mean. And, you know, I went to shows where I was, like, I was a kid. I was a pretty sheltered youth. And at these shows, the, you know, DX was out there getting girls to lift up their shirts on commercial breaks and just having fun. And but this was the age of the, what was that called, Girls Gone Wild and Extreme. And I just think things are what they are, you know. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other on it, but
yeah.
I think there's, you know, things definitely evolve, but wrestling's not an industry where being sensitive is really worth anything, in my opinion. You know, I'm not going to be sensitive and I'm not going to be offended, but I also believe in trying to be equanimous in almost all situations. So you're not going to get a reaction out of me one way or the other. You know, you could say that there's, you know, there's nothing somebody could say to me to offend me. It would just make me feel bad in sympathy and compassion for somebody whose mind works in such a sad fashion. You know, I just really, like, you know, if somebody thinks poorly of women, it's probably because, you know, might not have had the best childhood. Maybe it's some bad, you know, some bunch of jerks telling them that women are worthless and a lot of bad examples in their life. And, you know, they just haven't been shown the value, and they just have, you know, people just need to see things from different perspectives. And yeah, that's why I'm not one to jump or to criticize people. I say a bunch of stupid stuff all the time myself. So, you know, I mean, that's certainly not as stupid as that guy, but, you know,
yeah.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah. Very interesting perspective there. Let's tackle a few of these questions. Alex asks, hey Matt, I'm 15 years old and training. Any advice?
It's about the long game, not the short game. Technique and durability first, then do a bunch of crazy stuff after it. But technique's the most important thing in pro wrestling. It is a martial art, 100%. You don't go from white belt to black belt in months. It's a journey over the years. There is no destination, so just enjoy everything along the way, and don't have a somewhere that you're trying to get to. Just keep doing your thing, and if you enjoy it and you love it, you know, it'll just, one thing will lead to the other, and just be safe and don't hurt anybody else either. Be thoughtful of the people you're working with.
Agreed. Very much so. Michael asks,
and none of that weak-ass shit either.
You dropped that in there. Michael asks, who has been your favorite tag team partner through the years?
Oh, man, that's so tough. But I would say Ricochet is my favorite tag team partner, period, just without a doubt. I mean, actually, man, me and Ray had a great thing going on Raw just before I hurt my ankle. And honestly, if I hadn't hurt my ankle, you know, who knows how things would have gone. with that. We were definitely future potential tag team champions. But, man, my first ever tag team championship was with Christopher Daniels, and that was the one where, like, I really, really started to learn. And so I got I think I gained a lot from that. And then my other tag team partner that is completely invaluable is a gentleman named Seema from Dragon Gate, and he taught me everything I know. I mean, he's and the way I do tag team wrestling, the way tag team wrestling is nowadays, is Seema. He is an architect and a creator and a genius. Timing, speed, precision, athleticism, intensity, storytelling, character, madness, just bad, excellent, high quality pro wrestling. And man, that's, I love tag matches. I love six-man tags. Those are my favorite types of pro wrestling matches. Singles matches are great, don't get me wrong, but I think I've known the secret to pro wrestling to tag wrestling for some time, and it's my favorite thing to do, especially with Ricochet these days. Man, but I love Kofi. I mean, what am I supposed to say, Doug? I mean, there's so many good guys, and I'm kind of a tag team WHORE. I have been referred to as that. Me and Claudio tagged for a while. Man, I've had some. I've been fortunate to have some good partners.
Yeah. Well, as we saw in New Japan the past few years, you and Ricochet, you know, won the tag titles, and you winning the six man. You won the never open weight six man, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's tag team wrestling has been your deal, obviously, for people who follow New Japan, especially the past few years. All right. So, let's see. We got Peter asks, your favorite memories of Air Boom?
I think my favorite memories of Air Boom was just traveling with Kofi. I mean, we were on the road a lot together, and we had a really good time. He's just such a genuine good guy, and wrestling Primo and wrestling the Colognes, we just had awesome matches. The match I remember the most, that I loved the most out of that feud, was we were at Madison Square Garden, and it was me and Kofi had the belts against Primo and Epico, and we just tore that place apart for 20 minutes. It was just, we found a rhythm, and we just had it going. And I'm telling you, I was pulling out Dragon Gate tag moves on the fly with Kofi. Wrap his arms over the rope, grab his legs, pick him up, I'd jump on springboard and double stomp the guy's chest. I mean, it was just so easy and fluid, and just, man. And, of course, wrestling at Madison Square Garden, I'll never forget, like, jumping in a taxi outside MSG, a bunch of fans just kind of mobbing around and signing autographs and jumping in and just really – being as high on life as you could possibly be. Those were some special moments.
Yeah. That's awesome. So yeah, drop a link. If you remember, if you can find that match that you're referring to with Primo and Epico, drop a link on your Twitter.
No, dude, it was a live event. That's why you have to go to these shows live. I don't like watching wrestling on TV. It's boring. You got to see it up close, personal, in real life, hear it, see it, smell it, taste it, that kind of stuff. Hey, I got moves. Hey, I got my boy calling me on the other line. Hold on, let me do this one. So let me end that shit. Hold on.
Got a little pause here on the Pancakes and Power Slam show as Matt Sydal takes care of some business with his other line. so he'll be back here right quick. Looks like he's taking care of some business. Let's see. So, Matt, so there's for wrestling, 15 years old. Got a comment that said, go to college and earn a degree, Alex. very, very interesting. So let's just do this. As he comes back, my personal commentary. Matt, let me know when you're back here.
Sorry about that, man. Here's the thing: I do this thing where I run the business on the dark side, you know, on the subversive side, kind of a silent mover of the pieces of the chessboard. I mean, you know, I just making sure everybody's doing okay. So turns out the business is still running, even though I've been distracted for 30 minutes on the phone with you. However, I have enjoyed this interview, and we can continue with the Q&A if you'd like.
Absolutely. Thank you much. Let's ask just a few more so we can let you go here. When do you think Odenaho, let us know where you're from. That's definitely seems like a very unique name. When do you think Jinder Mahal will vacate the WWE Championship? I'm just asking the questions.
Why would he vacate it? I don't understand. I love Jinder. Jinder was like one of the I have like a loss for words at how good Jinder is at pro wrestling, at being a human being, at all of it. That's my kind of guy. I love seeing him as champion. It makes me so happy when my friends are like not just successful, but like successful. You know, it's easy to rise to the top right away, but to go through the ups and downs and look and know that there's peaks and valleys to it, and hard work and determination do pay off. And I always tell this to everybody in the business, and this goes to that 15-year-old kid: hard work pays off and the cream rises to the top no matter how long it takes. This business isn't that big, and if you're gunning for it, if you've got the heart and the aim, you can do it.
Absolutely. All right, Matt, let's give us your final thoughts and any dates you have coming up.
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody that civil disobedience is important. If you see something you don't like, if you see something wrong, just stand up and say something. Stand up for yourselves. Be true to yourselves. Don't try and be somebody else. And follow me on Instagram. Don't harass me online, but you can feel free to leave comments on my pages. But I appreciate you guys coming out to the live events. Like I was saying, that's where the magic happens. That's where I shine. If you're on the West Coast, I'll be at PWG. If you're in Canada, I'll be in Toronto, Ottawa, London. I'll be in Oklahoma and Dallas. And I want to shake your hands. And if you guys have T-shirt ideas or you want to buy my T-shirts, I'm on Pro Wrestling Tees, and I bring them to the shows. And that's how us pro wrestlers make our money and pay our bills.
Yes. And, of course, Bound for Glory, November 5th.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you better believe it. I got this great promo picture for it where I'm, like, yelling like a maniac. And it makes me feel really good because it kind of validates how insane I feel on the inside.
Nice. Matt, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks for coming on the show again.
Most certainly. Peace and love, my friend.
Ditto. Have a good night. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for your questions. Of course, we got so much more to go with the No Mercy thoughts, which are Raw thoughts, which are SmackDown thoughts. We got Q&A. I mean, we got a trivia of three of the pay-per-views that we're going to talk about today for the Flavor of the Week. We got so much. We got headlines. So without further ado, let's get it going. Bring it on, Evan Tech Prout, Under the Mat Radio. How are you tonight, sir?
Come on, brother. Doing better. A little bit of swimming well earlier, but I'm good now.
Awesome, man. It's great to have you on the show as always.
Good to be here.
Awesome. So we're going to talk about No Mercy. We're going to talk about No Mercy before we get to the headlines. And before we get to that, thank you, Matt Sydal. This is the put-over show. So we're going to put my T-shirt over. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my T-shirt, Power Slam Show T-shirt, nice and off the press and just hot as ever. We got so many people who are interested. You see it right there, the people on the live, WrestleZone.com. You can see it very, very clearly, Pancakes and Power Slam Show shirt. Only thing you have to do is just respond, send the Pancakes and Power Slam Show a either a message or go to cravewrestling@gmail.com with your inquiry. Or if you want a little sooner, if you want an inquiry a little sooner as far as getting one, just go leave a message on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, and we'll get your order together. We'll get you all set up wearing a Pancakes and Power Slam Show shirt. We got a bunch of people wearing Pancakes and Power Slam Show shirts, even wrestling talent inquiring about it. Don't forget to get your Pancakes and Power Slam Show shirt today so you can be sporting the shirt, as I did at WrestleMania, ladies and gentlemen. So
yes,
it was awesome stuff. So, all right, here's the first trivia question for tonight. Here we go. What was the opening match of No Mercy 2016? What was the opening match of No Mercy 2016? The opening match, No Mercy 2016. As the people on here for WrestleZone.com, and of course people listening to the audio through Blog Talk Radio, put the hashtag of PanSlams, 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 PanSlams. If you are listening via audio, if you're listening via videocast through the WrestleZone.com videocast, of course, just put the answer on the Facebook live chat. That's all you got to do. All right, so No Mercy this year. We got to it was coined WrestleMania caliber matches. Oh yeah.
Right.
The WrestleMania caliber matches were of course Brock Lesnar against I'm not finished with you. Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns against John Cena as Justin Roberts.
John Cena.
Yeah, it was like a Y and it's John Cena.
I actually tried to get him to do the John Cena. He declined and laughed only, and he declined in a respectful way because he said it's just something he just would have to do without thinking on it. It's just something he did. It wasn't, you know, he thought about it. It wouldn't come out the same way. But
come on, Justin.
Yeah.
Justin Roberts,
yeah.
You get one of these for the night. First one for the night. Maybe the last. Hopefully the last. But you get one of those for the night. Justin Roberts, how dare you refuse a John? He had two good ones. It was the John. And he was the Undertaker. Yeah.
He said that was his favorite. He said it was his favorite.
Yeah, of course it was. He did a very good job announcing the Undertaker. So very good stuff. Here's the correct answer. Opening match. AJ Styles versus John Cena versus Dean Ambrose, ladies and gentlemen. Let's throw it that way. Here's the next one. You ready for the next one? Here's the next question. What match did Chris Jericho defeat Shawn Michaels to retain the World Heavyweight Championship at No Mercy 2008? What match did Chris Jericho defeat Shawn Michaels to retain the World Heavyweight Championship at No Mercy 2008. Yeah. All right, so No Mercy. We had some very interesting pay-per-view. I thought it was I'll just share my thoughts after you. What are your thoughts on No Mercy for this year?
I was praying for Mercy watching it. I was disappointed. It just was an okay show. I was disappointed because I thought the show was going to be, it let me down. I thought it was going to be a lot better than what it was. Granted, it wasn't WrestleMania 11. You know, it wasn't the Last Table Tuesday. It was the Starrcade 94. We can go do the annals of time of, like, the worst pay-per-views ever. It wasn't the worst, but it definitely could have been better. But I thought it was okay with the exception of, you know, some things that I thought was well done. I thought that this was an okay pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a solid one. I thought, well, I gave it a solid, solid.
I give it 3 out of 5.
B minus. I give it a B minus. I give a solid B minus. It wasn't.
Yeah, I give it that. Yeah, I give it a B minus, not a C plus.
Yeah.
A little
above average. I give it a little bit above average. And so yeah, I thought it was a solid pay per view. I thought the endings were fine. I was totally fine with that. Christopher, his comments. He said Lesnar versus Braun was okay. Cena versus Reigns was awesome. Tag team match was unbelievable. I think that that's pretty good. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I agree with Christopher. The tag match, of course, the Cesaro Chief. I thought the tag match was very well done. One of the best matches of the night. I really enjoyed the tag match. And I don't want to jump to you over talking about the pay-per-view if you was going match by match. But if you go match by match, I'll hold my thoughts to the main event, the semi-main event.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the thing is about someone just commented on my wonderful face. Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. Very cool stuff. Yeah. Happily married, though. Sorry for you.
Yeah.
No. but yeah. Just a random. As far as, let's see. So yeah, that was a pretty interesting match. Pretty cool assessment. Thank you, Chris, for your wonderful assessment there. So yeah, I thought we got a correct answer. Great job. Ladder match. That is the correct answer. Booyah, ladder match. I think it was solid pay-per-view. B minus, like I said. I think and people were complaining about the Braun Strowman and Brock Lesnar match. I thought it was good, man. I liked it. I thought it was good. Great. I mean, I understand people were talking about he only sold to 1F5. I get that. I mean, maybe he could have kicked out of, you know, 1F5. But you know what? It's so funny because people always complain about false finishes, but when it's a clean finish that he didn't kick out of 1F5, then there's people who are complaining about it. He should have had false finishes. So that's just the nature of the beast, man. Like, no one, people just aren't satisfied.
I look at it like this. Braun is like probably been pushed the hardest since Austin, Cena, and I love Braun. Braun's a big monster. And it's something. One of my past guests said, could have been my show, Featherstone, could have been yours, could have been Jim Ross. And a lot of people complain, well, Brock, oh, he do C-plexes, and that's it. He don't do nothing else. Well, that's how Brock is right now. We know Brock can do more, but this isn't that kind of Brock. This isn't baby Brock from 03. And if you notice, he hasn't done the Kimura lot since now with Braun. You know, he had, even with Joe, he started doing other things besides the C-plexes, the little nuances, the little small things that kind of added story to the matches, you know, with Joe. Now with Strong Roman. And I didn't want Braun to lose because now only Brock and Reigns defeated Braun 1-2-3. But that quickly, when Raw came on, you forgot he lost. But that's how powerful WWE's made him. And it makes sense. Brock is like two monsters, and he has that one punch. That one punch, and he gets you. And it made sense. I was okay of Braun. It's weird. I was okay with Braun not kicking out of the F5, but when it was Joe, I guess because they were building him up, I thought Joe should have kicked out of at least one. Either way, it made sense. You know, Brock won. You know, he had the one big punch. And really, was Braun affected by it? No.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I mean, like, I really don't think Braun was affected by that. I don't at all. One bit. Because, like, Braun is, I think that he is just, he's kind of like Teflon. Like, he's one of those things that I don't think he's at right now. Braun Strowman is at a point where one loss against Brock Lesnar, who hasn't lost to a young guy since he came back, you know, 5.5 years ago almost. And so by losing against Braun Strowman, Braun has plenty of time. I mean, he's, you know, he's still in his, you know, early, almost mid, going to mid-30s. So, you know, he has a good solid 8 years, you know, left in him. And he just really started off, you know, so, and really as a singles competitor, it's been the past year, year and a half as a singles competitor. So he has plenty of time. I mean, he's, you know, he's going to be one of the biggest stars. And you can tell, because we'll get to Raw here in a minute, but you can tell the WWE is really, really high on him, because the next night, you know, he beats Dean Ambrose. We'll get into that. You know, the next week he's going to fight Seth Rollins. So
Seth
he's going to be,
he's just beating people up.
Yeah, he's going to beat Seth Rollins. And of course, you know, he just destroyed Curt Hawkins.
He's going to fight Matt Hardy. He's
going to
beat Matt Hardy up next.
Going into, you know, his next title, you know, picture. He beat up Enzo. So they're protecting him. You know, they had him dominate Brock Lesnar in the beginning of the match. So it was great. Reigns and Cena was fantastic to me. I thought it was really, really good. A bit slow in the beginning. But you know, it was one of those things that I was initially critical. However, I got to the point where I was just like, okay, so I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid of being that person. Braun would be champion by next year. I agree with that. Yeah, and it's one of those things that I didn't want to drink the Kool-Aid of, oh, I want some fast-paced, you know, 3 minutes into the match. When I was growing up with wrestling, it was stories. I mean, even New Japan does this a lot, too. That's the reason why Okada and Omega could have a 60-minute match, because the pacing is great. The ebbs and flows are great. It really tells a story in the ring. You know, when Flair and Steamboat,
yes,
you know, a lot of the veterans used to wrestle,
Flair,
it used to be
Dusty.
About Arn, Dusty. It used to be about stories. And so I think, you know, the stories in the ring has been, you know, kind of substituted by just a bunch of spots that people, I mean, it's kind of tainted people's patience, you know, within matches. And so after a few minutes, I was like, you know what? I know this is a story. I mean, John Cena is not the guy who has that type of mentality where he, you know, he can tell stories in matches per se. And Roman Reigns really has never had that type of match. You know, it was Daniel Bryan.
But Cena can.
Cena showed
he can. You know, when he went against Michaels, Triple H,
right.
AJ, Kevin Owens,
yeah.
Triple H, Jericho,
yeah.
Edge. So when Cena has to, he can. But I just
right.
think it's just, we're not used to Reigns being in that predicament.
Right, right. And he stepped up. And that's the thing. He stepped up to that
he
story
did.
Type of match. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things, man. If you don't like Roman Reigns, that's on you. However, as I wrote very extensively in that long piece I wrote for WrestleZone, you know, the reasons why people are not to like Roman Reigns are just false. I mean, like, I don't like him. If someone just says, I don't like him because he's just not my cup of tea, there's just something about him that just doesn't really click for me. Okay, go for it. But, you know, he can't because he can't wrestle. And I'm like, okay, man, you know, because he's not Will Ospreay, you know, people are quick to criticize him. But I think for the WWE style, I think he does very well, and he's just much better.
Watching Cena and Reigns, and I didn't, the match didn't have my full attention, but I was in the middle of a couple of things. But I did watch it, and I did enjoy the match. Already it seems like, okay, you're basically who I was 10 years ago. I'm now going to go make movies. I'm now going to go do but I criticized The Rock for doing when he came back. Yeah. Funny how things switch. John Cena was Reigns, and The Rock came in as part-time, blah, 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 and then Rock leaves and does movies. Now, Cena, looking at himself back in the future, okay, Reigns, you know, in the predicament I was 19 years ago, but you're the next big thing. People are booing you, like you for this no apparent reason, booing you just because everyone else is. They have no definite reason why not to like you. Now I'm going to play a rock, and I'm getting old, and I've been hit forever, so now we're going to make movies.
Yeah. That's the reason why I liked Roman Reigns promo last week on Raw a lot. He played that clip where Cena was getting, you know, upset about The Rock doing that, and it's funny because he's doing the same thing. All right, let's get into the headlines. Before that, here's the next question. Who defeated JBL to become the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship at No Mercy 08? They're about to come. Yes. You know what? Bastion Booger. It is not the correct answer, but just because you said Bastion Booger, you get one of these. Absolutely. Bastion Booger. All right, without further ado, in honor of Bastion Booger, let's get to the headline. Oh, it is pleasant time and happy time in the Bennett family. Mike and Maria Bennett's in reality, but, you know, kayfabe, Mike and Maria Kanellis. I just suspect that they're having a baby. They're having their first baby. Maria said that they, you know, were planning on having the baby last year when the schedule was lighter. But it didn't happen that way. It happened this way. And as of this week, I believe she said that she was 13 weeks pregnant. So love is in the air, man.
Well, yeah. Congrats to them. I'm happy for them. And I got to meet both of them a year or so ago. Pleasant people.
Yeah, so I've met Maria before. And, yeah, she's very, very nice. Very, very nice in person. Yeah, love is in the air, man. So, you know, that's their push is terrible. And Mike Bennett is just not doing well at all in the world of professional wrestling. Prayers are with him as far as just speedy recovery with his drug rehabilitation and the sort.
Oh,
but, yeah, you know, unfortunately, his pro wrestling career is not good at all. But
he's
his family's growing, so that's more important than wrestling any day.
And maybe that'll help turn him around.
Yes, definitely possible, definitely probable. Batista is the correct answer, as you can see very clearly right there. Good stuff. All right, so next question before we get to the next headline. We got questions galore today, trivia questions. So here's the thing. If you listen to this, and you need to download it. So if you're listening live, you still need to download it to listen to while you're at work. I mean, a lot of times you can't look at videos while you're at work. But you can listen to audio. So download this podcast and every single podcast, and subscribe to the Pancakes and Power Slam show on YouTube and leave a very positive review. And maybe you'll get a free shirt. We'll see. Next question. What was the stipulation of the Hell in a Cell match? Hell in a Cell match at No Way Out 2000. What was the stipulation of the Hell in a Cell match at No Way Out 2000? All right. Cody Rhodes signs a ROH contract for a while. He was talking about how he liked being a free agent. And even as the ROH champion, he talked about being a free agent as well. But, you know, he's in it. He's in ROH, and ROH has been treating him right. And, you know, he was one of those people who were like Seidel. You know, dates galore everywhere all the time. You know, just the life of, and he was in WWE, you know, all of his career. so when he left, you know, it was his first kind of, he nosedived right into the independent, you know, scene. He kind of went the backwards route, but it's worked very well for him. He's a very hot commodity in the world of the independent scene, and he's done quite a bit. Even dabbled in Impact Wrestling. He had the luxury of being a part of Impact Wrestling and ROH at the same time. Isn't that clever? That's how important he was to both promotions. They were willing to, you know, throw away any type of, you know, compete clause and anything like that, and have him be on both. So very, very, very interesting stuff. I think it's a good move for him.
Yeah, I'm happy for Cody. Gosh, what a long way Cody came from Legacy. Shout out to Legacy. Who remembers that group? They won't be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, very much. Priceless!
Oh, baby, I'm priceless.
That low rent wanted to be Evolution song.
Yeah.
Yeah, funny old logo.
Yes, very much. So the Legacy, so that was like Ted DiBiase Jr., Cody Rhodes when they were together. I don't remember Legacy.
Don't forget Manu. Don't forget Manu.
Manu. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a blast from the past. There was one more who got kicked out. There were two. Sim Snuka.
Sim Snuka.
Yeah.
He didn't catch Undertaker.
I mean, it's not funny to get kicked out, but it was funny that they just didn't see anything with them, unfortunately. It's terrible. Here's the answer, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up. Triple H versus Cactus Jack. Title versus career. And here's the next one. I'm telling you, man, I'm firing away today. I'm firing away. Here we go. Who won the WWE Tag Team Championship at No Way Out 2000? And who did they beat? Two-part question, ladies and gentlemen. Who won the Tag Team Championship at No Way Out 2000? And who did they beat? Next headline, Impact Wrestling potentially relocating out of Orlando. I think this is...
With somebody's basement? Doing shows in the gym? Maybe at like a multi-purpose hall like they did back in the 80s.
No, but here's the funny thing about that is the Amberdeen Pavilion, where they're going to have its Bound for Glory. In Ottawa, man, that is they use that building for like trade shows and like farm races. I think I saw like a
dog
pig
shows.
Race maybe. I know there was
and
like a
shows.
Maybe a dog show. I think it was some
and
farm stuff
show.
Too. Maybe a pig race.
Pretty much
something. It was something. It
and
was just like there's no bleachers. There's no seating. It was. I know they have a lot of trade shows there. It was just like a. It's like a big, just long
like
building. Yeah. I mean, it's just the selection
this
of.
This is when you know it's the end. When you have a building where about 70% of your attendees are retirement age or older with AARP, 401k, IRA. Walkers, canes, have to go to bed by 9 p.m. You know, it's that's when you know. I mean, I'm not making fun of those people. And I always joke about the overalls from back. I always joke about the overalls because you didn't really see as much of Nitro. If I could see the ceiling fan in your building or see a basketball hoop, it's pretty small.
I'm getting a lot of feedback. Farmer's
Market.
A picture there. And so that's going to be converted to Bound for Glory.
And this is their WrestleMania, their showcase.
I think only seats like 2,500 people, something to that nature. So, the turnout. I mean, you know, 2,500 people. I doubt they sell out, but you know, Anthem's based in Toronto, I believe. So. It's a Canadian. They're Canadian owned now, so I'm sure Anthem's going to do a lot of pub in Canada. The building is just it's a very atypical building, but then again, on the bright side, the Sportatorium was world class, ladies and gentlemen. That was the world class championship wrestling. The Texas Sportatorium. And oh man, you know what? I think I might have a soundbite of that. Check this out, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
Star Wars and Rockwing. That's your sound effect for the graphics.
Yes.
One of the best of all time.
World class. They have GWF there as well in the Sportatorium. So I mean, they, you know, it was. And the thing is, it's so funny because all the interviews that I've had for people, you know, legendary names, all of the interviews that I've heard from people like Booker T, who had some Sportatorium experience, Steve Austin wrestled in the Sportatorium. They both were in GW. GWF.
Greg Gagne.
And the funny thing is, each and every one of them would say
they hated working there.
That they hated being in the Sportatorium. It was a big dump. It stunk. There were rats that were in there. It smelled so rotten and dingy. But there was so much prestige in the Sportatorium that it was legendary. The building was legendary. Of course, it's tore down now because it failed all types of inspections. But at the same time, there was so much legendary stuff that came from there.
That's even back in the day before it was even railings or guardrails, and this was that single rope. Remember that? It was just that one that rope that string that separated the fans with the arena. It was one of my favorite world class moments. And I had this on like one of them old DVDs you would get from like the dollar store or like the Goodwill. You know what I'm talking about? You know, like three disc sets. It was Junkyard Dog against Jerry Lawler. And it was a botch because Junkyard Dog was trying to chase Lawler out of the ring, and Junkyard Dog slipped and fell right on his tail.
Oh,
and Jerry Lawler,
wow,
being the genius he is, as you say, broke the fourth wall and looked right at the camera and just like pointed and just laughing. To this day, this other stuff, I find it, I'll see the video of it on Facebook.
Please do,
yes. He just slipped. I remind me this week. Every time I think of world class, it's a lot of memories, but in them ugly Super Kicks and God Rush His Soul, Chris Adams, Super Kick and Peep King on their chest bone, Super Kick and Peep on their collarbone, yeah, like they got hit in the head. So you clearly see.
Yeah.
Tim Horner.
Oh, man, listen. Chris, we got Chris on here that is making some people tremble here with his trivia knowledge. Great job, man. Dudley Boyz defeating the New Age Outlaws. You get one of these. Good stuff. We've got a bunch of questions here. Kurt Angle wrestled
Chris,
this
did
year.
Did you use Wikipedia?
No.
Did you use Wikipedia, Chris, or Almanac?
He's been doing. He's been answering a few of these questions. We had some other answers, but he's been answering a few of them. Thoughts on Bullet Club Invasion? Yeah, we're going to talk about that. WWE had nothing to do with that. I'd imagine. My guess is WWE had nothing to do with that. They were in a Hot Topic, and I think they were in Ontario on Raw. And they were at a Hot Topic. I mean, if I was the Bullet Club, I would have done the same thing. It's amazing marketing. I think it's incredibly smart to do that because they got some pub for it. I mean, why wouldn't they have done that? I think, you know, even if WWE had nothing to do with it, invading Ontario, Ontario, California, during, you know, hours before Raw, I mean, there you go. I mean, it's very smart. Very, very smart. Of course, WWE's not going to make an angle with it because they're not going to partner with ROH. But it's smart. It's very smart, and I think it was good. Lucha Underground. So my good friend Marty Elias, he was giving me some updates, and I wrote a story about it on WrestleZone as far as the future of Lucha Underground.
Love Lucha.
Marty also has his own podcast, Ringside Pop, also with Kia Stevens. Of course, we know his Awesome Kong. So one of the executive producers, Eric Van Wagenen, I believe his name is.
Yeah, former guest in the show.
Yeah, he's executive producer for Lucha Underground, and he was on the Ringside Pop show, and he was giving some updates as far as just the future of Lucha Underground. It wasn't anything necessarily clear cut, but he said if he's a betting man, he'd bet that there will be a season four. He also said there's been talks, nothing conclusive regarding. Yes, we're having a season four, but there are some high hopes that season four will come back. You know, my biggest thing with Lucha Underground, and I'm a big fan of Lucha Underground. It's one of those things how NXT used to be for me. I used to just search it on YouTube and watch it that way because, of course, there was no network, and I didn't get, you know, there wasn't any type of, I mean, there was local airing, I believe FCW was in Tampa at the time. And so when NXT, when it kind of FCW, and then when, of course, when it migrated over to NXT, specifically FCW, I would watch the shows on YouTube. And so I would do the same. I still am doing the same thing for Lucha Underground. So and it's on Netflix, but I don't have Netflix. I had Netflix, but I didn't watch it enough. And I didn't have it, but my wife and I have been talking, and I think we're going to get Netflix again, PureFlix as well. But so I'll be able to watch it all the time there. But I watch it, I follow it, and I love the storyline. I love the theatrics. I love the type of feel for it I've had. Of course, I've had Johnny Mundo on the show. I've had Son of Havoc on the show. And it's, you know, they both had, I've had Ricochet on the show when he was Prince Puma. And, you know, all three of them had really, really good things to say about Lucha Underground. Understandably so. It's a really different type of feel towards it. The only thing that my biggest criticism with Lucha Underground has nothing to do with the talent. I just wish the actual production is fantastic. I just wish that the airing of the show would be a little bit more current. Now, I know they film full seasons. I know just the contract, you know, stuff. I get it. But at the same time, I just kind of wish. I wish the product was aired a little bit more current. That is my only criticism with Lucha Underground.
Yeah.
Because right now, they have stuff that was taped like a year and a half ago. They're showing it now that was taped then, you know. In essence, I mean, in actuality, you know, I think Johnny Mundo lost the Lucha Underground title, I think, in 2017.
I get what you mean. So I did it for feedback. But I just think that's one of the things that gives Lucha Underground that unique feel and look. Plus, remember, Robert Rodriguez is one of the producers as well. So his touch on doing things. Right. And if you look at a lot of El Rey, I have El Rey. So I have contests in Baltimore City. So a lot of Robert Rodriguez movies, El Rey kind of has that grindhouse feel, kind of like older feel in Robert Rodriguez movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it just gives it looks unique from anything else that you watch. ROH, New Japan, Impact, I with Anthem, TNA, what do you want to call them? WWE.
I think that was the last episode filmed. I mean, as of today, I think that was it. Just Johnny Mundo and the Lunar Champion. There were still a few episodes that yet to be aired. So only they've only won one match the entire year. It was like a 6-man match, or no, it was like a 8-man match, I believe it was. Like in February, like a SmackDown Live in February they won. And that's all. I think they won one match last year too. Maybe two, but they've only won like two matches like in the past like year. So I mean, I understand that people the Ascension, you know, let's face it, the Ascension wouldn't be. I doubt that there'll be anyone special. If they leave the WWE, they're just not marketable strongly enough, and they're just not. I don't think that there'll be anything, you know, marketable. However, just losing all the time has to take a toll.
Yeah, one of them, gosh, gained so much weight like a pig.
Connor.
Oh, man, gosh. I'm like, gained like 80 pounds since you've been gone.
Yeah.
It's like one of them plush dolls, one of them old WWF toys that used to sweat, used to squeeze, and used to sweat. That's how Connor looks now. And shout out, I believe it is Connor, who me being a friend of the Hart family, Bruce Hart and the other Harts. I believe Connor came up in Canada. I believe he had like a good run in Canada before he came to the States. Is either Connor or the other one?
But
I've heard enough of good news about.
Victor's a smaller one.
Victor's a smaller one.
Yeah. All right, here's the next trivia question. Who won the Intercontinental title by defeating Chris Jericho at No Way Out 2000? Who won the Intercontinental Championship by defeating Chris Jericho at No Way Out 2000? All right, what is your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown?
I didn't get a chance really to see SmackDown much, so I was a little under the weather. I did see your boy Maharaja. First thing I saw on SmackDown was AJ Styles in the ring, and
you know
Brad Corbin talking.
Hold on, real quick. I like Matt Sydal. He's been on the show twice. You know. I understand that he has a kind of a tainted opinion because he's a friend of Jinder Mahal, and I understand that, you know, he's a friend, he wants him to succeed. I get it. But to a non-friend of Jinder Mahal, absolutely not. So Nothing to take away from his ability, and he looks like a champion. I've said this before, he looks like a champion. But he needs to dig down a little deeper and try to figure out, I mean, watch tapes. Show me that you are really investing in the business from a research, a study standpoint. That's, you know, people mock Triple H as much as you can. But that's one of the things that I really appreciate about Triple H is that you can tell that, I mean, he studies the business. You know, he's one of these. He looks at tapes. He does a lot of stuff to study the business.
It's his style. You can say what you want with Triple H. No one can ever say Triple H doesn't have mic skills. It's just
right.
It's just how he talks. It's how people talk about Dustin, if you will. Dustin can talk. Now, I'm sorry. I know how much you love Maharaja on a mic. But on Monday night, I declare, this person made Maharaja look like The Rock. Neville? No, I'm sorry. First of all, the ending of Raw was just weird. It just was like anybody listening on WrestleZone Live or Facebook Live, anybody that's an anime fan, even TV fan, they have episodes called Fillers. Where is this? You just stole time. You just need to do two episodes. And just bypass time because you don't want to end the storyline too quick. Anybody that's a Breaking Bad fan is listening. For example, I love Breaking Bad. Great show. You should watch it. One of the filler episodes was the whole episode was about a fly.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole episode was what was Walter and Jesse while they're in the meth lab trying to kill a fly. That's a filler
mm-hmm.
episode. It happened, but it was like, okay. That's how the end of Raw was. Raw ended with the cruiserweights. Why the cruiserweights now forming up against Enzo? Enzo to me is a one-trick pony. Enzo's funny, but after you do your stick, after you talk for about 2 minutes, it gets old. Strowman against Ambrose was great. Everything else was fine. It just the ending of Raw just was like, what is going on?
Yeah, the ending, that being the ending of Raw, was a bit of a stretch to me. I mean, that goes to show that you're really investing in the 205 Live. That, I mean, there is just seemingly they're on the last leg. In fairness to Enzo, though, Enzo has really almost single-handedly transformed the interest in 205 Live. Austin Aries did that when he came. I think he kind of revived 205 Live. Neville, when he came, and especially his heel turn, I think that really helped him. But it was one of those
Kendrick.
Things that, I mean, in a way, his CWC run was a lot better than anything 205 Live related. But, you know, it's one of those things that, when I saw doing that segment, first of all, is Enzo turning heel? And if he is turning heel,
he is random.
The biggest heel in 205 Live, Neville, is doing something babyface. He's leading his 205 Liveites to defeat Enzo Amore, but Neville's a heel. And then you bring out Braun Strowman, who's a heel, and destroy Enzo Amore. It was just very confusing to me.
Well, okay, I must have missed that part. So, Braun Strowman destroyed Enzo after Neville?
It was after the, they put it on WWE, the video, it was off the air. But, I mean, it was off of Raw, but it was still kind of on the air because the WWE taped it and put it on their Twitter.
Braun Strowman, remember guys, Braun Strowman is basically like the big monsters from Xena Warrior Princess or Hercules or from Mighty Python. Any of those fantasy video games you play. He's big and he just destroys anything and everyone in his path. He doesn't need a reason to beat you up. He just does it because he's Strowman. I'm not finished with you. But and not only that, Neville, well, Enzo was funny. We all thought about Neville's ears. Looks weird, like an elf. And me on my show, one of my correspondents told talk about how Neville reminds us of Highlander. And Neville, why are you talking on a mic for more than a minute?
Yeah.
You see really how he, Cedric Alexander, and I know Cedric Alexander, just like I know Rich Swann, Cedric Alexander, okay size guy. I know Cedric Stone, you're a big dude. I'm not really the biggest guy. But you see how big Cedric Alexander is compared to everyone else. And he's still considered to the Swann WWE. But not only that, like you have never just a heel, he's playing the face. Izzo's the face, trying to play a heel. And now you have Neville, who hasn't done this since he was barefaced before he did his King of Cruiserweight turn. He's pandering to the crowd before he does the Red Arrow. What is going on?
And that's exactly my point. It makes no sense. I mean,
Great Arrow, though.
One of the most heelish people in the entire Raw brand, Neville, who's been a really good heel since his turn. There's nothing about Neville that should even look like a babyface right now, and we're seeing that. I mean, if Enzo's going to turn, that's fine. Let him turn. I'm okay with that. However, if Enzo's going to turn, let him push someone who's a babyface, like a Cedric Alexander, like a, I guess you can say, Grandmaster League, but not really. I mean, Rich Swann, but he's been champ already.
Gallagher. What his name is?
He's heel now. He turned against Cedric a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So and that's the thing, though. So, it further makes no sense, because Jack Gallagher just turned heel a few weeks ago, like a menacing heel, was repetitively beating the snot out of Cedric Alexander, but now he's teaming up with him to, dethrone Enzo. Just a bunch of confusion.
This is what you can do. I got the answer. Version 1. Matt Hardy needs something to do. Bring back Matt Hardy version 1. Have him go for the 205 check. We clearly know he's not even near 205.
That would be funny. Yeah. speaking of Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, well wishes for him. He's reportedly his shoulder. I'm hearing rotator cuff, and so.
Yeah, rotator cuff is what I got.
Rotator cuff is usually about 9 months or so. So that's unfortunate for Hardy, because it seems, I mean, if it's just a full tear and surgery's going to be required and usual recovery time, unfortunately he's going to be missing out on Mania. So hopefully it's not as bad as we think it is, and hopefully he'll return in time for Mania. Correct answer, Kurt Angle. Good job. Next question. Here we go. Next question before we get to Flavor of the Week. Who were the participants of the flag match at Bad Blood 1997? Who were the participants of the flag match at Bad Blood 1997? All right. So as far as SmackDown is concerned, I'm getting intrigued, more and more intrigued with Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. Kevin Owens revealed that this is going to be main event of the night. So they've got a lot of stock in this feud. Unfortunately, on the other hand, it's Jinder Mahal. He is bringing down so much that WWE championship. I mean, I know it's, and again, I understand it's not fully him. I understand that he's being handed scripts. I get all that. But it's one of those things, man, like if you have that type of opportunity, you have to capitalize. I mean, the WWE can tell you what to do, but it's up to you to create something memorable. Like, Steve, I can't imagine WWE just kind of throwing everything about Steve Austin on someone else and it working. I can't imagine WWE just taking everything about The Undertaker and dumping it on someone else.
I agree. Right, and it worked.
Like, you can't, like, when they did the, like, you can't, someone kind of like The Undertaker when they had the fake Undertaker when, you know, Primetime Brian Lee. You can't just, you couldn't just use Primetime Brian Lee. There was something about The Undertaker that just really enveloped, you know, and just really immersed in his character. And it's just with Jinder Mahal, I don't see that whatsoever. It just seems like a cookie cutter character. It's a foreign heel, and it's just, there's nothing unique about Jinder Mahal whatsoever. Answer: Bret Hart and British Bulldog versus Vader and the Patriots. Flag match that we'll talk about here in a minute. And the last question before we get to the flavor of the week. Actually, a couple more. Here we go. Here's the next one. We got to get going. Who won the 1998 King of the Ring tournament? I'll let you answer that, Evan. Who won the 1998 King of the Ring tournament? Very, very easy.
Man, that was it Billy Gunn or was it Shamrock? Shamrock.
B. King Ken Shamrock, indeed. Good job.
Shamrock won it.
Yep. Who did he beat?
Oh, gosh. I know him and The Rock had a good one. Wasn't The Rock, wasn't him and The Rock semi?
It was.
I can't remember.
The Rock.
Was it The Rock?
And the last question. Last question tonight
was,
one
of the most underrated
main event of Bad Blood 1997? What was the main event of Bad Blood
1997? Oh, come on. That is easy.
Sal Undertaker versus
Shawn Michaels. Remember Shawn Michaels claiming that this is when he was really starting to become great heel Michaels with DX. He's talking about how he didn't want to really face Undertaker.
Yeah.
And it's funny because no one remembers the rest of that pay per view. Everybody just remembers the Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. And speaking of that, we're going. So without further ado, let's get right into the flavor of the week for the next few minutes before we close. Here we go.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's start with Bad Blood 1997. The debut of it's gonna be Kane, and October 5th, 1997, and of course, as I've been doing recently, as far as pay-per-views are concerned, I also am going to have some thoughts on and some interesting notes from Wrestling Observer. So with that. As far as the results are concerned, we had Nation Domination defeating Legion of Doom. We had Max Mini and Nova defeating Tarantula and Mosaic. The Godwins defeating Headbangers. Owen Hart defeating Farouk. DOA defeating Los Boricos. Bret Hart and British Bulldog defeating Vader Patriot. And then, of course, Shawn Michaels defeating The Undertaker. What do you have for that show?
Man, this show about anybody's.
it wasn't very good, honestly. I don't think it was very good. I give it like a. I give it a C minus just because of Taker, Michaels Taker. I give it a C plus because of Michaels Taker. Real quick notes about that. Of course, unfortunately, it was the weekend following Brian Pillman's death. He was scheduled to continue his feud with Goldust Marlena. Ken Shamrock was in St. Louis that day. He was planning on wrestling, but he was unable to take any bumps due to his lung injury. And was in caution and ordered and just pulled from the match, the handicap match. DOA versus Los Boricos was a last-minute match. They only have a few minutes to get dressed for that, so very interesting. A few tidbits about the flag match. It's supposed to be a flag match, but it was changed last minute for some odd reasons to be just a regular match. It was like flag rights. David Boy Smith's knee was bothering him. It was his first match back. Vader suffered a broken nose and a hyperextended elbow in the Japan match with Shamrock, and was basically working the match with one arm. Patriots suffer a viral infection early in the week. It was so severe that he collapsed due to dehydration, and he was also rushed to the hospital. We had fluids inserted and IV, but tough old Patriot, man. He still did the match. So, very interesting tidbits on that particular pay-per-view. Hell in a Cell. We had Ken Shamrock winning it by defeating The Rock. Also, The Rock and Dan Severin was on the pay-per-view. Ken Shamrock and Jeff Jarrett was on the pay-per-view. Undertaker defeating Mankind in a Hell in a Cell match. Kane defeating Austin in the First Blood match. Very interesting stuff, man. X-Pac defeating Owen Hart. Too Much defeating Al Snow and Head, with Jerry Lawler returning as a guest referee. And, of course, the six-man tag team, Kantai, losing to the Headbangers and Taka Michinoku. What would you give this pay-per-view? What would you give this pay-per-view? I give it an A. I think it was a pretty solid A pay-per-view. I was pretty okay with it. I think it was pretty good. So, lots of good stuff about it. Lots of good matches. Lots of memorable matches. The First Blood match was also good. A couple tidbits. May have been the first pinfall loss for Severin has ever taken as a pro wrestler. And then the Midnight Express, or the new Midnight Express, were still known as the NWA Tag Team Champions. Even though the gimmick was gone, they were considered the lowest level jobber tag team on the roster. And Taker was working with bone chips in his ankle that limited his mobility. And then, finally, before we get off of tonight, we have No Way Out of 2000. Basically, that turnout with WWE was, of course, the retirement match was the big angle with that. Kurt Angle defeating Jericho for the Intercontinental Championship. Dudley's defeating New Age Outlaws for the Tag Team Championship. We also had Mark Henry defeating Viscera. And ENC defeating the Hardys, the number one contender for the Tag Team Championship. We had Taz defeating the Big Boss Man by DQ. X-Pac defeating Kane, No Holds Barred match. Too Cool defeating the Radicals. Six-man match. Big Show defeating The Rock for number one contender WWE. And the WWE Championship number one contender match. And, of course, Triple H's retiring, quote-unquote, retiring Cactus Jack. And a title versus right. Career match. Are you back with us? What do you got for No Way Out 2000?
Progress there. It's the difficulty. No Way Out 2000, I thought it was a good thing to do. I think it brought a B plus.
I agree.
The Dex Rage match.
Yeah,
that,
it was good.
That was good.
Yeah, it was good. I agree with that. It was really good. All right, real quick. Due to his injury, Billy Gunn was rarely in that match. He was scheduled in as far as against the Dudley Boys. There's a lot of heat on the people holding up the Foley Will Die sign, as well as the cameraman that showed it. So, there are interesting tidbits about these pay-per-views. Of course, we'll get some more Hell in a Cell-related pay-per-views next week. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, it's been a fantastic
yes.
Episode 287. Thank you to Matt Fidel for the Q&A.
It's been an honor.
Of course, thank you to Evan Tech Prout for
it's been an honor.
Another awesome, successful show. Much fun as always. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Evan Tech Prout, I am Chris Featherstone. Of course, once again, follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter. Follow the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling, and get you a Pancakes and Power Slams shirt today. Once again,
yes,
inquire on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. Just send a simple message, and we will get you going as far as the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are signing off. Thank you so much for listening. And everybody, enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Good night. Bye-bye.